All right.
Okay, I want to just start, though, by saying this. When did we last see each other in person coming to New York?
Not for a while.
Not for a while.
Our friendship is really, really long distance, but it doesn't really matter.
No, maybe it's a better friendship because we don't see each other.
Maybe so. I recommend it highly. But because when you see each other, it's really special.
And you're great
really
on each other's nerves. No, yeah. I'm not going to say that. But we went to, was it 17 cities or something?
Mm-hmm. We had a whirlwind book tour last February.
Yes.
In the cold weather, all around the country, from city to city. We went to schools. We went to all kinds of places. But it was incredible.
We went to bars. We didn't do anything like that.
Dude ranches.
We traveled around, and we did presentations to schools, and we haven't seen each other since, I think we haven't seen each other since the day we did an event in L.A., and Meg had written a book called The Wife, and Glenn Close was nominated as Best Actress in that movie. And so
thank you.
That was all happening during our book tour, and I think you stayed in L.A.
to go to the Academy Awards.
Yeah. And I went to Seattle or Portland or
right.
I went
right went off without me
somewhere, and so that was I think of all the different things that have happened in our life, and it's hard for me to separate how exciting it was that you wrote a book that got made into a movie.
It was an incredible experience, but I have to say this. Also was an incredible experience. So we thought we would tell you a little bit about how we came to write it, and then we'll read you a little bit, and then maybe you guys have some questions or something, and we can chat.
Yes.
So as you heard, we met at a conference, and it was a big...
I'll give you $5 if you say the name of that conference, because I know that you can't.
I have no idea.
That's
Do you
thing.
Know it?
Well, I think it might have been Naperville. Was it Naperville? Is that a place in Illinois? Naperville. Okay, we were...
Naperville. Andersons.
Andersons
of Naperville.
Naperville. Yeah. Naperville. I pronounce everything incorrectly. And Meg is a Scrabble champion. She's never, since she was in second grade, she has never misspelled a word. Mm. And since...
I catch the typos.
And, so, yeah, and since first grade, I have never correctly spelled one. So, yes, we were at that conference and we...
And we just joked around and instantly had the same... realized we had the same sense of humor. Because I don't know about you and your friendships, but sometimes friendships really form out of shared humor. And that's certainly what happened with us.
Yes, the basis of it... And I won't do this today. I like to make you laugh, right?
Totally. And you do that very easily. Oh, like you just did a joke. Okay, can I just... She just did a prank on me here in this building.
Well, because who doesn't love a good prank?
I mean, as long as it's a safe, not scary one. But my husband...
Or can be scary, too.
Who's a writer, was going to be working upstairs. You know the writing rooms? Do you know the place where people can write upstairs? Or in the big writing area up on 12? And I looked in and I didn't see him. And Holly started looking in the smaller rooms. And I know
the little private rooms you have to reserve.
And I knew he wasn't there because you have to reserve it. And she said, "Oh, hi," and went in. So I followed her. And of course, it was a joke.
He
wasn't
there.
Dark room.
He wasn't there. And then when she rounded the corner, she told me not to say anything. When she rounded the corner, I went, "Ha!" But I was trying to say boo, but without actually making noise, because she told me you have to be very quiet.
So we had an idea that we would write a book, but we didn't really know what that meant. And especially, we were challenged by virtue of living on different coasts.
Yes.
So Holly's husband, Gary, who is also a writer, said something.
Well, because I said, Meg and I wanted to write a book together, but we don't know how you write a book together. When you're a novelist, the one thing you have, the only thing you have, the thing that matters the most is your voice. It's your voice. And so I said, well, how are we going to do that? And I was in the kitchen. It was the morning. I just fed one of the dogs. How are we going to do that? And he was reading the LA Times sports section, which means he only half listens to me. And he said, just start, Holly, by emailing each other. And he meant I should email ideas, characters, locations. I should email.
Here's what I was thinking.
Yeah, my thoughts. Yeah. And instead, I walked out of the room and I went, oh, well, that's interesting. He says, just email her. So I wrote an email. You don't know me, but. And that email is very close, and I think we should read it.
Yeah. So
we didn't change the first email very much,
no,
which is pretty funny.
We wrote a novel mostly in emails, but in some other kinds of letters. But that's not what he meant at all.
But also, can I ask you this? Will you raise your hand if you've read it?
Oh, excellent. Oh,
okay.
That's pretty good.
That's good.
Ray. This is so annoying. But okay, so the kids have all read it. That works in our favor.
Yeah, good.
Okay, so I'm going to read. So you've already read it, so I don't know. If they've already read it, this is boring, but whatever. We're going to read it anyway. So this is the first one. Originally, of course, it said from Holly Goldberg Sloan to Meg Wolitzer, but in the book it says from Bette Devlin to Avery Bloom, subject, You Don't Know Me. You don't know me, but I'm writing you anyway. This could go into your spam. Maybe you're the kind of person who checks the spam. I don't. I found your email address online. You have a strange name. I never met anyone named Avery, but that made it easier to find you. So thank you for having that strange name. Also, thank you for going to a school that posts pictures of field trips and uses firstname.lastname at theshiffieldschool.org and gives students their own email. I don't go to that kind of school. So this is awkward, but I'm going to just say it. Your dad and my dad met 3 months ago in Chicago at a building expo, which was at the downtown Marriott. I'm not going to explain how I know, but they are now a couple. This isn't my business, only it is my business, because my dad wants to send me to a place called Siggy this summer. I never heard of Siggy. The website says challenge, inspire, guide. Ooh, so I did that wrong. Challenge, influence, guide, inspire. That was cut and pasted. Those words are how they got the name. Siggy is a summer program in Michigan for inquisitive teens and tweens aged 10 to 15. You could be bored reading this email, but guess what? You're supposed to go to Siggy too. I'm not going, no matter what my dad says. So if you won't go to Siggy either, it might stop him from forcing me to go. That's what I was writing about. Bette Devlin.
From Avery Bloom to Bette Devlin. Subject, Ray, you don't know me. I think you are confused and have the wrong person. If my papa was in a relationship with your dad, there is a 100% chance I would know about it. We're very close. And it's just been the two of us almost my whole life. So we're best friends and he tells me everything. As for my school, it's helpful to have your own email so you can write to a teacher in the middle of the day to ask about a project. Ms. Pickering sometimes responds in 5 minutes. No one from outside my school community or family has ever found my email address before and written to me. The school might need to upgrade their privacy and security settings. I will post a note online. About Siggy, my friend Callie Workman's older sister went there last summer. I'm signed up for the 8-week session. It's kind of a creative nerd camp. At Siggy, you take classes called Booking Around and Exotic Robotic, and you'd also do archaeology searches for real fossils in Dig This. Plus, they have microwave popcorn at night for shut-eye cinema, where they show a foreign movie before bed, and everyone talks about it together looking for themes. The best part is they don't force you to do sports. I am not athletic, and also I hate to swim. I have some excessive worries, eating expired foods, getting a disease, etc. But drowning is the biggest one. You will never have to go to Siggy. I'm the only one of us going there. Avery A. Bloom. P.S. I'm 12 and I live in New York City. My papa is an architect. Even though you sent your email to the wrong person, I'm curious. How old are you and where exactly are you writing from?
We'll read one more, but I want to just say before I read the next one, upstairs, you asked me a question, did you not? You said, would you have eaten the hummus with the expiration?
That's true, I did. I asked you about an expired food.
And I said, well, of course I would have eaten it. Okay, from Bette Devlin to Avery Bloom, subject, you don't know me. I'm also 12, and I live in California, but I've been to New York City. It was a summer, and really hot, and crazy crowded. I felt sorry for the people there and super sorry for the animals. My dad constructs swimming pools and fountains, anything with water. He doesn't design it, he builds it. So your dad's an architect? Usually my dad's fighting with architects. You said your dad shares everything. Well, do you see your dad's text messages? Every time my dad hears his phone ping, he smiles like, oh, this guy, he just kills me. I've been camping lots of times. But I've never been sent to camp. We don't have the money for that. My dad wants me to go because of you. He wants me to be your friend. No offense, but that's not something I'm going to do. Bette Devlin.
From Avery Bloom to Bette Devlin. Subject, you don't know me. Bette, how do I know you aren't some kind of hacker from Ukraine? You don't say the Ukraine. You just say Ukraine, which makes sense because you wouldn't say the France. And how do I know this isn't all a scam to get me to reveal the details of my life so you can drain my bank account or maybe something worse? It's savings only, just so you know, and it's for college. I'm going to be very careful in answering your email. I checked the Google Calendar I share with my papa, and he was in Chicago. He was in Chicago in February at a building expo, but that proves nothing. My papa is not here this weekend. He's in San Antonio for work. Maybe I shouldn't have said that. But just so you know, I'm not home alone. There is an adult here in the apartment with me. Plus, this is a doorman building, and since a famous person lives upstairs, not that famous, they are always very careful with security. I could text my papa right now and clear this up. I'm going to do that because I'm not allowed to be communicating online with people I don't know. You won't hear back from me because you have the wrong person and the wrong dad, although you did have the right camp. But that's some kind of weird coincidence. Avery A. Bloom. So that gives you a sense of what our book is like. And, of course, we hit on Ukraine as
I know.
Being like
we
the biggest
kind of
thing in the world. We could not
Ukraine.
Have known when we were writing this.
We could have
this.
Put some politics into it
That's
right there.
Right. Yeah. So you get a sense, I think, right away of who each of the girls is. And people ask us, are you Avery? Are you Bette? I mean, certainly when we started writing it, we almost used exaggerated parts of ourselves to write those characters. But then one of the most important things about writing, and do some of you want to write, be a writer or like writing in school? Okay. One of the most important things, I think, is rewriting is when you work on something later, because that's when you really make it better. So we switched.
That's the super painful part, but the part that is the most necessary part.
Yeah, it's not the fun part.
You finish it, and you really all you want is for everyone to tell you how great you are. That is your sole purpose in life. And then you give it to a few people. In this case, we were actually wrote the book by the first pass through writing each other. And we decided not to talk about what was going to happen next.
Just to write to each other as if we were in the voice of these characters.
And that sometimes led to frantic phone calls or text messages. What's going on? What are you doing? from us. But there's a I think in the book a kind of freshness
because
we didn't know.
It wasn't planned. Like, you know, you read a book where you feel that the author was forcing the plot and you could almost see it coming down the road. There's none of that in here, I don't think. I think it's pretty surprising what ends up happening in the book, too, because we didn't
surprising
even know.
Surprising to us.
Yeah, we really didn't know. And actually, speaking of surprising, I also want to say that our editors had no idea we were doing this book. It was a big surprise to them.
We're both at Penguin Random House. That's
a big publisher,
but we are at different imprints, and so we have different publishers that work in Penguin Random House, and I'm with Dial, and you are with Dutton, and we are both edited by the publisher of that imprint, and we were both afraid, we were both supposed to be working on books. I was supposed to be working on a book about a girl that had I don't even know if you know this. I was supposed to be working on a book about a girl who had a therapy dog, but a real one, not like on the internet where you just buy a little vest and sneak it on the plane.
What happened to that? That sounds good.
Well, I got sidetracked by...
Will you do it again? Will you do it?
I don't know. I did sit next to a dog with one of those fake things on my plane right here. But I was supposed to be doing that. I don't know what you were supposed to be writing. What were you supposed to be doing?
Well, the one that I'm still supposed to be doing about a girl writing in a journal, and I told my editor all about it, and she was waiting for it.
Yeah, so then we didn't do what we were supposed to. I did actually ask. I came to New York, and I had lunch with my publisher, and I said, hey, here's a crazy idea. What if Meg and I wrote a book together? And my publisher had a look as if I had said that I had malaria, and she said, you know, it's just not a great idea because... you're at different imprints.
It's too complicated.
It's complicated. How would we edit it? It's not that great, really. I think that's a bad idea. And I reached across the table. I just remember, and I took her hand because she looked so upset, and I said, I won't do it. And then we finished our lunch, and then we went outside, and I sent Meg a text and said, well, we have to do it now because they don't want us to. Okay, I know that's a very bad lesson to say to kids.
Very bad lesson.
But
it
kind of was inspiring to me because the way she had said it was almost like, that won't work and it can't be done and it's not a good idea.
I think what you mean really is that you wanted to prove that it could be done and that we could do a good job.
Show that we could do it. Yeah. But so then we didn't tell them. And then when it was done, we were scared. And so we told our agents, and the agents scheduled a call. So we didn't even have the guts. That's got to how childish we are. We didn't even have the guts to tell them. And so the agents scheduled a conference call, and not even with the publishers. Again, that's how Child's Play. With the head of Penguin Random House.
She didn't know what to think. Like it was like an. She had no idea of what it was about.
I'm gonna tell you what she really thought it was. She thought that they had a big celebrity political client that wanted to write a book, because that's what happens all the time. She thought it was like Joe Biden was going to write a cat book, or you know, there's like a thing when they call and they get these phone calls and they're very politically orchestrated. Right. And my agent's the head of an agency, and your agent's a bit. So they thought, oh, this is going to be some book where I'm going to have to say, oh, that sounds so interesting. And then when they said, we have news for you, Meg and Holly wrote a book together, she was so relieved. She went, oh, thank goodness. Yeah. What a wonderful thing. So we were right away off the hook.
So we told you how we wrote it, and it just came together. But as Holly said, rewriting is not the fun part, but it's really an important part, because that's when we started to see, oh, maybe we need more of this. You know, and we wanted to make sure that each girl, Avery and Bette, was represented well in the book, like that their personalities came through, that one wasn't more dominating than the other in the story. Because it's really a story about friendship. And I want to say that I mostly write books for adults. That's what I'm more known for. This is something that I love to do, but people who know my writing mostly really know me in books that I write for adults.
So books like The Interestings or The Wife or...
Yeah. But one of the things that I've written about a lot is young people. I've written about teenagers. I've written about preteens. In my book, The Interestings, which Holly mentioned, a group of kids meet at a summer camp and they're 15 years old and it follows them over time. But I also love writing about friendship, and you do too.
I do. I guess that was like throwing the ball to me there, the friendship ball.
Well, I just thought I didn't want to talk too much. Like, I didn't want one character to talk too much in the thing, so I thought I'd...
Yes. I think I like to write about outsiders. I wrote a book called Counting by Sevens, and I see someone has it in the front row.
It's a great book. Have some of you else here read Counting by Sevens? Then you're in for a treat. That's great.
Well, then your schools are not doing their job. No, I'm just kidding. I like to write about outsiders. I like to write about fitting in. I like to write about what makes a family.
Yeah, I think that's
and
actually
the reconstitution
that's another
of family.
That's another theme in this book. What is a family?
And we do in the book. There are three different summer camps. I myself only went to summer camp one time for 2 weeks when my grandparents sent me to a camp. But I think I milked every bit of knowledge out of those 14 days I was at camp and put it in the book. But you, on the other hand, have some very depth of your experience.
I went to camp and it was a really big, important experience for me. So now I've written two books, at least, that feature camp in a big way.
And when you first went to camp, you were quite young. I mean,
So I went to camp. Holly likes the story.
I like any story where she's slightly uncomfortable and I can kind of see it. Go ahead, tell us about when you first went.
See, now you're throwing it back to me. So my sister and I went to a camp when I was 8 years old.
A sleepaway camp. Doesn't that just sound barbaric to you?
No. Do some of you go to camp? Yeah.
When you're that age?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
that's a very urban thing. I'm just going to say, I'm from California.
Yeah.
We don't do
that. No, it's very different. No.
Well, we don't sleep away. I mean, did you go sleep away at 8? Like, we don't believe, we believe. 6 weeks?
I went.
It's
I was 8 and I went for a month. It was... I go to Europe to I do book events in Europe sometimes, and because my novel The Interestings was about camp, nobody in Europe goes to camp. They were like, well, maybe a farm camp. Like they didn't know really what I was talking about.
I think you were in Germany and you kept saying camp and they were getting very uncomfortable. Well, I'm just saying they don't go to camp there.
They don't go to camp there. So I was at this camp. I was 8 years old, and my big sister Nancy was there, and she was 11 and a half.
Was that her first year too?
I think they
sent her ahead.
She went ahead to Surprise Lake.
She's an artist, really great artist.
She went ahead to Surprise Lake a couple of years earlier, so she had liked it, but I think she went for a shorter period of time. I was so homesick. They had something there called the Homesick Club that I joined. And you know what we did? We sat on a hill at the end of the day. Everybody who was homesick, we sat on a hill and we all just cried. They let us cry it out. And that was the activity of, seriously, of the homesick club.
That's like my favorite thing, just imagining little Meg. Like, did you have glasses then?
No.
Oh, because I always, when I picture it, you're having glasses on
your because Avery does.
Yeah, you're crying on a hill.
Yeah. But I came to Love Camp, so it came to become something that I thought could be really good in a book. So there are three camps in this book.
There are three camps.
And they're really different. The first one is that nerdy camp where you get to do robotics and science experiments and stuff.
And then there's a theater camp, and then there's a very traditional East Coast
like
camp.
Like a girls' camp, yeah.
Because the whole book takes place over 1 year.
Maybe we should see if they have any questions.
Are we finished talking with her?
Well, I think so. I don't know. What time is it? I don't know.
I think we... Okay, fine. Fine.
Let's see if not, we'll just keep
talking. There's a question from a kid, which is always the
excellent,
best question.
The best, yes. Hi. Do you know the answer to that?
Well, we ended up working on the book for a year and a half, and we turned in a draft after only about 4 months. But then every time we did another pass, it took us a couple more months, and we worked a lot on it. We made some big changes to it as well.
Yeah, I remember being in a subway, and you had shown it to your son, and your grown son, who's such a great reader,
He's a writer also.
And I was like, we were waiting for his response.
He was the first person we let see it, because he's the first person a lot of times. My son, I trust him, and I know he... And so we were waiting. And, of course, remember what I said, that when you write something, all you want is for the world to tell you how fantastic you are. And I gave it to him, and he said...
He said they sounded too much alike. That was an early version.
My suggestion is, no one see this but you.
I was shocked. We were ready to go. We were ready to show it to our editor.
Yeah, we were ready to turn it in.
I was in a subway, and I got a call from you.
It's just like the two of you talking at the same time to each other, and your voices aren't different. And
well, I think that, I will say, that's one of the issues, I think, that if you are friends and you share what I call a sensibility, like a way of seeing the world, even though these girls are different, some of the humor was like a joke that either of them could have made, and it was too similar, and I think that was such an important criticism, and that it took like a year, I would say a year of editing maybe, right?
Well, the other thing he said, he said, you obviously have so much fun writing each other that your entries are way too long.
Yeah.
You go on and on and on. It was pretty harsh. He can be kind of harsh. And then we went and looked at it, and we realized
it was long, repetitive and long.
Yeah.
It's so funny how you can't, you know those magic eye pictures? Do you ever, where you see the thing jump out? I find sometimes with editing that I stare at a manuscript, stare at it, and I don't see what's wrong. And then suddenly I do. And I don't know what happens neurologically, you know, in your brain to make you suddenly see what you need to do. But sometimes you can't see it. You just have to keep working on it.
Sometimes it's just time. Yeah. That if you can get away from it. The irony of writing a novel is you have to be so focused on it. You have to climb inside it. It has to be everything. You have to go to bed thinking about it and wake up thinking about it. And it has to take over. And the same time that happens, you need to be free of it. You need to get away from it. And they are two very different things, very counter things. And that was one thing that was great about working with someone. We're on different time schedules, so I might go to sleep at night and wake up.
And it's like your book got written. And it's like self-rising yeast. Yeah. She'd wake up in the morning, and some of her book was written by me.
and we are on different schedules, so... That was all really fun.
It's really fun. That never happens.
I always think maybe there are a lot of magical people that live inside my computer and they're actually doing everything.
We really recommend, we were talking about this to kids in schools, that you might think about writing something with a friend, those of you who are kids in school. Like you might say to a friend, I'm not even going to tell you anything about this character, but I'm going to write in someone else's voice. And you write back as someone else. And you can write a book that way.
It's basically improv. We're telling you to improv, and that's what we did. So in improv, you never stop. It's always yes and, and that's...
Right, you don't say that didn't happen, because if the other person says it, then it happened. So Holly would write, you know, she said, I'm not going to this camp, and I don't want to meet you. So I'm not going to say, but wait a minute, you have to be nicer than that. No, her character is tough like that, and I had to then deal with it, and my character then became a little anxious in response to that. So
we also did it. At one point, we'd written ourselves to a place where we sort of stopped, and we were somewhat confused.
Yeah, we didn't know where it was going plot-wise.
And then I sent you an email, and it just said, 4 months later. And sometimes that helps you when you're writing a book or when you're writing anything.
No, it's true.
You jump time, and then you don't have to explain everything that happened, but there have been changes, and it allows you to go forward. So it's kind of a trick, and we did that twice.
We did it twice, and in fact, I do it a lot in my work because I was just at a writer's conference in Hawaii, and I was telling people.
A terrible, horrible place to have to go for a conference.
Terrible, hard life. If you're in a scene, if you're writing a short story and you're in a scene and you don't know how to get out of it, you can just have a line break. You can have an extra space. And then you show your character the next day ice skating. And the reader isn't going to go, but wait a minute, how did she get out of the restaurant? What? She didn't ask for the reader understands that she was in a restaurant, line break, now she's ice skating. So you can really jump ahead and be pretty bold as a writer, I find. So that, yeah, it took a lot of trial and error. No book is easy. It's never easy doing this. It's always a lot of work.
It's the worst.
Well, I don't know if it's the worst.
Well, at times.
Yes.
Okay, more and questions?
Yes.
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 She sent me a text first. I sent her a text. What's going on?
What are you doing? And she was like, just answer it. So I did.
Can you imagine? Only like
so
an
maybe
hour
you
later.
Could confuse your friends that way. Maybe you could send an email to your friend with a different name, you know?
Like, hello, this is Ricardo.
I'm Ricardo. What time will you be at the dance? Yeah. Excuse me? Yeah. I think you have the wrong person. I was totally confused. And then I got into the swing of it pretty fast. And then it was my favorite thing to do. Really, to write a book with someone else, you know, it's so much work. Hundreds of, you know, often hundreds of pages. And, you know, or 100, 200 pages, whatever, or many more. To have somebody to share that with. And I love work. I love to talk about work. I love to think about work. I love to think about books. And to have somebody to do that with all the time, it's just great.
So here's a crazy thing about the two of us. We met, how many years ago? 5 years ago? 6 years ago?
Like 6 years ago, maybe.
We met, and we are born within 9 months of each other, and we both have 2 sons, and we are both writers who are married to writers.
And our parents are, have mothers who are artists.
Yeah, and we have fathers who are psychologists. Meg started at Smith, and I started at Wellesley.
Women's colleges.
Then she went to Brown, and I was at Dartmouth. And we have so many things that are similar in our lives, but then we have huge things where we're very different. But we're bonded in some ways by we're writers married to writers who have sons.
And we're the same age, so we have the same cultural references.
And that was the basis in the beginning of our friendship because we have lived similar lives. Writers work really every day, and to make a living as a writer, you just can't do it unless you are just dedicated to it. And that's
we're both really dedicated to it, hardworking, working all the time. And have
is that Richard out there?
No.
Okay.
No. Yes. Come in. Ha ha.
I thought I saw her husband walk by. I wasn't kidding. I really did. He's very tall, but no, that's not him. Never mind.
Yes.
My husband's in LA, so that's not going to happen.
You know, when we were in school, we would talk about that. We'd talk about when we, and I actually thought I was going to be an actress. But I recently, my mom moved, and she handed me a shoebox of my life. So that's really all she'd kept. I was really hoping that there would be art in it, and I was hoping there would be things I had written. But instead, it was just filled with my report cards. Which is really tragic, but try to remember that that's what they save. But so I took my report cards out, and in second grade, I had a teacher named Mrs. Perrin, and you back then you just checked these boxes, and they said, like, unsatisfactory, satisfactory, okay, good. I'm looking at the checking and what she's saying. But then in the end, she wrote note to Holly, and then she's written very carefully, I hope for the rest of your life you tell stories. And the thing is, I can't remember a single, like, what kind of stories would I have always been a little bit of a blabbermouth, but I mean, maybe that even impacted me because I did like her a lot as a teacher, and she hoped I told stories. So, and you have some interesting.
Well, my mom is a writer, and
she's a famous writer. Her mother,
yeah, she's great. And when I was little, I had a first grade teacher, Mrs. Gerby, who used to invite me up to her desk to dictate stories to her, and she would write them down because I was just learning to write, and she could, and I would tell stories, but she could write much faster and better. My handwriting was like this big, like a mural. And my mom saved them, and one of them was about two truckers. And the dialogue, I had an interesting discovery on the road with Holly. The dialogue in one of the stories went, "Get up on the rig, Mac." And Holly said, do you remember what you said?
I said, she goes, "I don't know where I got the name Mac," because we didn't know anyone named Mac. And I said, "Well, do you think you saw a truck that said Mac truck?" And then you
never
saying,
occurred to me. I'm sure
get
that's
up on
what
the
happened.
Rig. But yeah. I wanted you to say what happened with your mother when she went and she was doing a reading and she had the teacher who had said she had
So my mother has told me a story that I really love. That's kind of funny though. My mother grew up in a house with not a lot of books, unlike me. I was really fortunate. There were so many books and storytelling and bedtime reading, and Charlotte's Web was the first book I ever cried at. I remember reading it so much with my mom. But my mother grew up in a very loving house, but it really wasn't a book-filled house. And when she got a great report card, the teacher had written on it, Hilma, that's my mom's name, Hilma shows a great deal of promise. And my grandparents were so proud of my mother, and it meant so much to the whole family that she'd said this.
It was like as if they saw she has so much promise that they saw their daughter in a new way,
yeah.
That a teacher had said that.
And so when she became a writer, she thought of it a lot, and she was giving a reading. So now she's a grown person. She's in her 30s and publishing and writing, and she gives a reading, like something like this, and an old woman is in the back of the room. And the woman comes up to her and says, "Do you remember me? I was your teacher." And my mother said, "I do, and you had such an important effect on me and my family because you said Hilma shows a great deal of promise." And the teacher said, "Oh, honey, I said that to all the kids." But you know what?
I love that
if
story.
Somebody says it, if somebody says it, it might really have an effect. But here's someone here, Denise, who I went to high school with, and I would say in high school I was the editor of the literary magazine and always writing and knew I wanted to be a writer. From the time I was quite young, when I was like 6 or 7, but it never really went away. And it was so encouraged by, she had these wonderful teachers, Ms. Esslinger and Mrs. Kidder.
But you guys were drama kids. Weren't you both drama kids?
I was more than Denise was, but we were in the forensics league. Like we did speaking and debating. But I was the editor of the literary magazine, which was called Ken. Syosset, Long Island. Yeah. So, yeah, there a question? Are you raising your hand?
No.
Oh, sorry, I thought you were.
When I was in high school, I wrote a fake letter to Dear Abby.
Dear Abby was the advice columnist?
And like it was a crazy letter about I pretended that I was a woman whose husband had recently retired and that he had bought a parrot and taught it to swear and say every horrible swear word and that it was driving me crazy and the neighbors were calling to complain and what could I do? And Dear Abby wrote back and her whole thing she told me was to put the parrot in the garage, which I'm not sure that would have actually been the thing to work. But then I wrote her back and said, "Ha, ha, ha, I made up that letter." And then she wrote me back and said, "That's not a very nice thing to do." And I have a letter from Dear Abby. But in the end, she goes, "Well, but maybe you're a writer." And I think that she I guess I don't even know why I did that.
I had an experience where,
of course, I did just tell you your husband's upstairs.
Have you read Amelia Bedelia? Do you know those books?
Yeah.
Well, I read one of those books, and I loved it so much as a child. So I started writing a book. I was maybe about 7 or 8. I started writing a book called, like, Cordelia Nagelia. And she dusts the curtains, you know, the whole thing. And I brought it home, and I showed it to my mom, and she went, and she was a writer. She said, wow, this is pretty brilliant. I'm going to show it to my publisher. And I went, no, you can't. But you know, it was so funny, because I was like, I loved it so much, I wanted to have written it. So I just kind of, like, you know, plagiarized it at 7 or 8. But then I was going to be found out, so I couldn't have that happen. But I think that
a lot of early writing is
imitation.
It's
imitation. That's my point. Yeah.
Which is flattery. And we all, in a way, we all still do it with styles we like.
Yeah, things we love, we want to be like that or celebrate it. Because every book is a reflection, in a way, of other books that you've read. We all learn from the things
that's
we read.
That's why if you want to be a writer, you really have to be a reader.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm checking the time here. I think we have room for one more question, and that'll complete our show.
We can take both. We can take the quick
okay.
ones. Yeah. Oh, how about there?
Okay. There, we have a somewhat of a disagreement with our publisher about it. Well, I think it should be 10 and up.
And they're calling it 9.
They're calling it, I think.
Anything in there. Right, 10.
No,
I think. A real.
No, it's not because there's. The reason why is because they will ask questions. Because it's about. There's a love story in here between two men. And they'll ask a lot of questions about. And how you then have children. It just leads to an area that.
Yeah, there's. But maybe 9. What, you know.
I think 10.
10?
How old for kids? Like 10 years old, I think.
Yeah. How old are you guys? Are the kids who've read it?
9.
Yeah, and Maddie, you're how old? 8 to 12?
Yeah. Oh, but so the thing is, you're, you know, Willow Chance. You're like.
Okay, well then, maybe 8 or 9. I mean, the publisher.
I mean, we're in New York City, so, but there are definitely. If you go on Amazon, you will see that people have complained that this book was in a book box, an Amazon book box, and they have said, and I don't necessarily think that they are people who, they have just said it wasn't something that was in their child's life, and they weren't ready to have some of the conversations they were asked. Yeah.
But so it depends. It's a personal choice, but maybe 8 or 9 then? Okay, great. Another quick. Yes, back there. Oh, sorry. I am working on an adult novel, and I am also working on that book that I owe my publisher that I didn't write because we got sidetracked and did this.
But we have continued to work together because we've adapted it for film.
Yep.
And we adapted
this
together.
Yeah, we wrote the screenplay. Yeah,
and
so.
We did it for a company called Depth of Field, which is Chris and Paul Weitz, the Weitz brothers.
They did About a Boy.
They did About a Boy, and Chris wrote Rogue One. And
the Golden Compass.
And they're doing
right?
Pinocchio. Anyway, so we wrote it for them, and then it was financed by a really interesting company called Macro. And Macro is a man named Charles King. He's African-American. The character that of Bette is African-American in this book. And they did Fences and Mudbound. And
this would be the first like family movie that they would do.
And so we, while we're sitting here, have gone out to studios. So we were actually hoping that we might be together when we heard something, but it's so slow right now in Hollywood that.
But do you want to say what else you're working on?
I'm just finishing another middle grade book. And I'm just almost done.
Yeah. And then last, what was there? Yeah.
So I came with one question, but as you guys were talking, a different one sort of came up, which is when you received that first letter on the email, you were like, my goodness,
What a great question. Right, so...
I don't quite know.
Yeah, Avery get... You know what? So, yeah. So I get this email, and here's this tough girl saying, I don't care. We're not going to camp. I'm not going to camp. You have to tell your dad. This is like, you know, they are a couple. And it's in capital letters, too, which is shouting, right? There's a lot of capital letters in this, which has cracked me up because Bette writes a lot.
Only from one side.
Only from one side.
Yeah, when you see the letters themselves... Yeah. The Bette character uses caps, and she
so then I would, but it's so funny because then my character was never allowed to use caps because we needed them to have different styles. You know, I laughed after I was like, whoa, and didn't understand what was going on. I thought, oh, that's interesting. How would a girl that I could imagine writing respond to something like that? Because she's no pushover, Avery. I mean, she's like tough and persistent and annoying in certain ways. And she's going to match her thing for thing. So Bette is going to be tough and do action and get in trouble and do the zip line thing. And right, you, like unhook her hooks on the zip line. And Avery is going to, which never do that. And Avery is going to be...
We got a postcard today from a kid that said, could you write me back and explain how exactly you unhook the zip line?
Yeah, right. No, I know. I saw that. I was like, oh, my God. Here's what it was. I knew that while they had to be really different personalities, mine had to be as strong a personality as hers. Because what you want in a book is voice. That's why you love the books you love. There's a voice. There's a feeling you get, you know, when you read a certain writer. So that's, I think, what we tried to do. So I tried to match her voice for voice to make
but
sure mine wasn't just like weak.
But there is a strange thing about email where email doesn't have the kind of nuance that speaking does.
No.
And email sounds tougher no matter what you do.
I know, because you're getting to the point.
Because you can't soften your voice. And so after I start to read some of those versions, it sounds like I'm just a lunatic. But to me, I wasn't trying to be.
But you have to read the whole book because then later on you see
her
vulnerability, too. Like, she's really upset that her dad is falling in love and is maybe not going to be there for her all the time as much as he's with her now. And she doesn't want things to change. So she's got a vulnerability.
All right. Well, speaking of vulnerabilities.
Yeah. That might do it. Well, thank you all for coming and being
such
good readers. Appreciate it.
And thank you to the library. And you guys have a fantastic
library. Thank you, Randy, so much for inviting us. I love this library. I took my kids here for
readings.
She's
a member.
I'm a member, and I love it very much. So
yeah. And kids, thanks for coming. We know you have a lot you can do in life.
We didn't sign books. she's probably gone to